I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets Podcast. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and we have another superstar guest on today to get you kicking into 2019. I've got Anton Gunn, and he has been a leadership advisor to some of the biggest brands in the United States of America, including the President of the United States, which we're definitely going to delve into for all of you because I know that's piqued your interest. And he's worked with hundreds of leaders and organizers in the public, private, and nonprofit sector. And I know we've had some others in the past who have worked in different spaces in corporate, and that has also excited a lot of you. He's the founder of 937 Strategy Group, which is a consulting practice that provides services to leaders and healthcare organizations who want to build a world-class leadership culture that transforms employees' engagement and services outcomes. He's a former lecturer at Harvard University and the author of two books, The Presidential Principles, How to Inspire Action and Create Lasting Impact, and The Audacity of Leadership. So with that amazing intro, well, I'm not talking about my intro, I'm talking more about Anton's bio. Welcome to the show, my friend.
I'm happy to be here. Happy to be with you, Victor. How you doing?
I'm good, my friend. I'm good. I love to kind of get a bit of a gauge before we kind of talk more about what you've done. How did you get into what obviously when a lot of us become adults, it's like we start off doing one thing, we end up doing something else, and then it all comes to this. So before we get into how you started working with the President of the United States, how did that all kind of come about to what you're doing now?
Yeah, so that's a great place to start. So so I never envisioned growing up that this is what I would be doing with my life. I literally started as a high school athlete where I played American football here in the United States and happened to be a very good athlete. And when I was 17 years old, the first leadership opportunity I was given was when my teammates named me captain of the football team. And when I was named captain, my mother, who was a school teacher, invited me to her class to speak to her fifth graders about what it took to become a leader and a captain of a football team. And I got passionate about education at that point and decided I wanted to be a school teacher in my career. And so I went off to college. I played college football at the University of South Carolina on the offensive line. I finished college and really wanted to be a school teacher, but it was a tough economy and I didn't take the teaching exam in time. So I needed to find a job that would help me make it until I could get a teaching job. And I got a job at a small nonprofit organization that was focused on healthcare services. And their mission was to make sure that the healthcare services in America helped low-income families of color, people who many times didn't have healthcare. And what I found myself doing really 2 months into my first job is speaking before public bodies like city councils and county councils, elected bodies, explaining to them why people in the community need healthcare services. And that's where I first learned how to tell a story. I had to tell the story of families who didn't have good access to healthcare, many times were down on their luck. They didn't make enough money to make ends meet, but they still needed treatment for their healthcare challenges. And so I wanted to be a teacher, but ended up being an advocate. And being an advocate is where I got the opportunity to tell stories.
That's awesome. I want to go back to the first thing. When you were captain of your high school team, and you gave that first talk, so you caught the passion for teaching.
Yeah.
How from then to now, how, like, what went through your head when you had to give that first talk? Was it always something that you were confident in? Was it did the confidence equal what you actually delivered? And you know, and did that start a journey of how can I become a more effective orator or public speaker?
So I'll tell you, the funny thing is I was very comfortable in front of a crowd. And the reason why I was very comfortable in front of a crowd, before becoming a speaker, I was an aspiring rapper. And I wanted to be a hip hop artist when I was a teenager. And so I had performed in talent shows and public events. And so I was used to being on stage and having a microphone, but instead of speaking to people as I would be as a speaker, I was rapping. I was telling rhymes and telling stories in rhyme. And so I was comfortable in front of the crowd. But what inspired me when I was a high school football player and I got to talk to those students was how people responded to what I said. And I could see the look into their eye that they were really into what I was saying. And so I wanted to add the value of how I projected as a rapper as a part of my spoken word, as a part of my speech. And so I had some natural abilities and some natural comfort, but it took me many, many years before I became a speaker who was not only good enough to give a compelling 45-minute speech, but good enough to be able to charge, you know, 5 or 6 figures for a speech. And it took me a long time to be able to get there.
And so take us to that next step. You started talking to your organizations that were obviously decision makers, and you had to tell that story and craft that story. Now, I don't know your kind of background, whether it was something that you could pull from experience from the story side of things, or was it something that you had to kind of get in amongst the people, and you're obviously dealing with a lot of these people. How did you find, because I'm a big advocate of, you know, the power of story. How did you find kind of that muse, I guess, and what do you find makes an effective story within your kind of industry and the people that you speak to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's really in two parts. And so when I started, part of my job was to collect stories. And so in order for me to go before a decision-making body and convince them that they needed to do something, I couldn't just have one story. So I would literally talk to 200 or 300 families, and they all would have a similar thread through their stories. And so I would say, you know, I've spoken to 200 families, and most of those families have this issue. And I would say, and here's one family. And I would tell the specific story of one family. But it was like I had one personalized story, but I had a lot of facts of other stories to back it up. That was somewhat effective in my experience of being able to convince people to do certain things. But it was only after I had my own personal experiences with the healthcare system that were negative that I began to be able to tell a more powerful story. Because when you're telling someone else's stories, you can hear some of the details, but you don't know all of the intimate details. But if you start to tell your own story, you can bring a whole lot more color into the experience. And so when I would tell the story about how I had stacks of medical bills of over $17,000 and couldn't pay them all because I didn't have good quality health insurance, it was more powerful for me to be able to talk about that I had an anesthesia bill that was $495, that I had a prescription drug bill that was $1,500. And so I was able to tell the story in a much more compelling way because I had much more color. And so I think the best stories are the ones where you can be as descriptive as possible to let your audience really feel like they're a part of the story, where they can literally see, smell, and taste what you're saying. And so I couldn't do that really in the early part of my career. And it took me a long time to understand that it's better to teach people how to tell their own stories. And part of what my job became later is to build up the individual's confidence to be able to tell their own story. And that's a big part of being a leader, is that I think every leader who takes on a leadership role, when you walk in front of the room, the people respect you immediately because you've given a title. You have a title. But that respect is only entitled to you for one day. The next day, you have to earn your leadership every day. And so to earn your leadership, you have to know how to talk to people about your experiences and your own personal stories. The more you're able to connect with them around your story and share some vulnerabilities to show them that you're not perfect, that you made some mistakes, people can identify with you and connect with you. And that's what I learned over my career, is that the best leaders, the best speakers, are the ones who tell powerful stories that everyone can connect with.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. Like, it's absolutely brilliant in regards to, I mean, I preach about, oh, I don't preach, but I go on about the power of storytelling and how, you, I mean, you can give fact after fact after fact on a, you know, whatever people want to kill people by PowerPoint or whatever they want to do, or, you know, yeah, read it all out and have the most factually based talk. Or you can give people a story and control the narrative, take them on a journey, get them emotively involved, and they don't have to remember every single detail because they know that whatever you're talking to, your overarching message was connected to that, and then they can connect and relate to it. So, I mean, yeah, we see stories every day. So, I mean, thanks. Yeah.
And I had a boss tell me one day, when I say a boss, he was really a mentor, my business mentor. My first business mentor, he says, Anton, facts tell, but stories sell. Mm. And that if you really want to convince someone to make a business decision to buy your product or your service, you have to tell them a story. Because you can give them all the facts and figures all day. You can list, like if you're selling a car, you can tell them about the power steering, you can tell them about the heated seats, you can tell them about the seat belts, and you can tell them about the stereo. All of those are facts. But you have to give them a story that they can see themselves inside of the car with the top down, driving on the coastal highway with the pretty girl sitting beside them, and how they're now extra special because they're in this car. So if you can tell a compelling story, you can sell people into making a decision that will help your business or grow your company or even convince them to your side. But if you just give people the facts, they'll get lost in the facts. They'll glaze over everything that you said and forget everything that you said. But if you tell them a story, people will remember stories. Because before we could write things down on paper in the history of the world, before we passed things down on paper, we passed things down through oral stories. That's how we learned most of our life, what to do or what not to do. We all got told a story about our grandparent or our great-grandparent or an uncle. And those stories would help move us into a better direction. And so if you want to convince someone of something, you got to learn how to tell a great story.
It's been, if you are listening to this right now, rewind all of that and just really take that in, because I mean, I can only harp on to you about how effective stories are for so long, but when you hear it so well put, thanks for that. Let's jump into kind of the next phase of your life, and we'll see what kind of speaking gems come up there. So you've gone out on your own, I assume, and you've started your own business. Run us through that and kind of how let's chase to the steps of the president.
Yeah, so that's a great way to move next. So I started speaking for free. So whether it was youth camps or summer camps or church events or neighborhood events, it didn't matter. If people wanted someone to come and talk about public policy or talk about healthcare, I would be happy to come and speak. And I remember getting invited one day to a church, a local church. They do a youth Sunday at the church. So every summer on one Sunday, they'll invite a young person to come and speak to the young people in the church. And so I got invited to speak, and I gave a great speech and got a standing ovation. And at the end of the service, the priest or the pastor of the church came up to me and says, that was a great speech. So much so that I want to give you an offering, a love offering, because you did such a good job. And he wrote me a check for $150. And I was like, wow, you going to pay me to speak? And he says, yeah, that was good enough. We're going to pay you to speak. And I took the $150 and was so excited. I went out in the parking lot to get into my car to drive home. And a woman ran out to me in the parking lot. She says, Mr. Gunn, I was in the audience of hearing you speak today. And I'm not a member of this church. I just came to visit. But your speech was so good that I talked to my pastor, and we would like for you to come to our church the next Sunday and we want to know how much do you charge to speak? And I said, I looked in my pocket, I pulled out the $150 check, and I said, I charge $150. And she says, great, we love to have you. Those are the first two times that I got paid to be a speaker. And that's literally where my business began. Now, my business as a speaker was always part-time because I had a job, and my job was focused on doing good community work. And how my story with the president began is when I made a decision to run for public office myself. I ran for elective office in South Carolina, and I ran a great campaign, but I ended up losing by 298 votes. And when I lost very closely, out of 14,000, only 298 votes separated me and the winner. I was a little dejected, but a lot of people patted me on the back and they said, you made a great first try, good job. But I felt inspired to serve at that point. And at the same time that I felt inspired to serve, I heard a news story about a skinny U.S. senator from the state of Illinois in America who was thinking about running for president. His name was Barack Obama. And you can look into Time Magazine. If you Google Anton Gunn Time Magazine, you'll see the story about how I got involved in Barack Obama's presidential campaign. I helped him to become president of the United States. And then after he became president, 2 years later, he asked me to serve in his administration. And I became one of his senior advisors as he began to implement healthcare reform in America and try to pass the Affordable Care Act. So for 3 years, I served as a senior advisor to Barack Obama. And my responsibility while I worked for him was to do three things. Number one is that I helped to coach him on how to talk about healthcare reform so it would connect with the American people, particularly young people. So I actually gave the president coaching and consultation around the right words to use to tell the right kind of story so young people would connect with healthcare reform. A second part of my job was to be a keynote speaker on behalf of the administration. So on behalf of the president and the cabinet secretary of Health and Human Services, I would travel the country and give speeches at conferences about the value of healthcare and what we were trying to do to make healthcare reform a reality. So while working for the president, I gave some 900 speeches across the country talking about healthcare. And in telling that speech about healthcare, I would tell stories about the millions of families who were at a crisis place because they didn't have good healthcare, or what happened to a family because they couldn't get good treatment. And so I helped to sell the Affordable Care Act to the American people. So it not only became law, but after it became law, that people would then take advantage of the benefits that the law created. And so that's how I got to know President Barack Obama and work for him for 3.5 years. Now, he is not the only president that I've had an interaction with. I've only worked for one president, but President Herbert Walker Bush, President Clinton, President George W. Bush, and the current president, Donald Trump. I've been in the presence of all of these presidents for various reasons related to my personal and my professional life. And I've basically taken those experiences and have distilled some leadership lessons that no matter if you're president of your neighborhood association, president of your social club, or president of just your family, these are lessons you can use to inspire action in people, create a positive impact, and build a world-class culture inside your own organization. And I now do that for business inside of healthcare organizations and tech organizations in America.
It's one hell of a story. That's awesome. I mean, I come from New Zealand and live in Australia, and healthcare and public healthcare is kind of an accepted norm. So when I see people kicking up a storm against the Obamacare or Affordable Health Care Act. I follow a little bit of politics from afar, but I'm like, that's the norm everywhere else, people.
It makes no sense, right? Yeah. It makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah. But we are where we are in America. And so part of my responsibility was to try to help be a difference maker. And that's exactly what I was able to do.
Well, congratulations on that. And in regards to where you're at now, so to, educating and inspiring from the leadership standpoint, what I'd love to delve into for those who are looking to go down potentially that corporate route or, going into organizations and training, apart from having the awesome social proof of working with the president, what are some of the things that you do to get a foot in the door with some of these organizations and maybe some of the negotiation process when it comes to getting paid and what that kind of whole process looks like behind the scenes?
Yeah, so that's a great, great question. So first, social proof is an important part of getting in the door. But I think what people want out of a consultant or out of a speaker is they want someone that understands their industry. They really want someone to understand the challenges and the opportunities that they might have in their business or in their organization. And so in order to do that, you have to be somewhat of an expert on the industry. And so there's some speakers who try to talk to all industries. So they'll try to talk to businesses, banks, they'll talk to community groups, they'll talk to hospitals, they'll talk to everybody across the board, where I choose not to do that. I choose to focus inside of one industry, the healthcare industry. So whether you're a pharmaceutical company, whether you're a hospital, whether you're a clinic, whether you're a drug rehab agency, whether you're a case manager, my focus is to try to know that industry. So I read industry publications. I become members of the different trade associations. So I'm a member of the National Association of Healthcare Executives. I'm a member of the National Service Healthcare Executives Organization. So I join the associations and I go to their conferences. And at those conferences, I learn their language and their lingo. I learn how they talk about problems. What's the nomenclature inside of people who work in hospitals, which would be different than the nomenclature that you would use if you worked at a bank or if you worked at a corporation. So learning the nomenclature is a big part of when you write a proposal to use the words that they're familiar with. And what I tell aspiring speakers that if you don't know an industry, this is how you understand the language that they use. Pick the number one company in the industry. So let's say if you were picking fast food industry, you would pick McDonald's or Burger King or whatever the company is popular. If you pick McDonald's, you can go to McDonald's corporate website and you can look at their annual report. So what did the CEO say to the entire company about how well we're doing as a business? If you read the annual report, the CEO will write the annual report in their nomenclature. So he'll use the words customer service or hot food fast, or we want to cut service times down to 30 seconds through drive-through. So you'll learn the language of the industry by reading the corporate reports or the annual reports of the organization. Or sometimes you can just get it by reviewing their websites. So me getting business is easy when I make a phone call or when I send an email to a customer, a potential customer, a client, and I start to use their nomenclature. They have the belief that I have a higher level of expertise in their industry because I know the language that they use. And so that gets me a little further in the door. Then beyond that, it's around understanding what their problems are and making sure that my speech or my topic for training is a solution to their problem. Is that I never try to be the hero. So you're a company or a business owner, you want to be the hero to your customers. I don't want to be the hero. I just want to be the guide to help you to be the hero for your customers. And so what can I provide to help guide you into a better path so you can have that impact? And so that's how I get in the door. So the context of proposal writing varies from group to group. Some people want a short email that's just two paragraphs about who I am, what I can do for them, and how much it costs. Other people may want a five-page proposal. Tell us why you're the best fit for our brand or for our company, what you can deliver. And so you have to be nimble and flexible in catering to what your potential customers might want and might need. And I'll also say to most of your listeners who may be experts in their own industry, so all of us have a job at something before we became an aspiring speaker. Many times that's the best place to start. That my expertise in healthcare started when I was a 23-year-old and couldn't get a teaching job and I had to go work in communities. I learned how hospitals operate. So my expertise started out of my professional career as a healthcare worker. And so I chose to just stay in that industry. But the messages that I deliver could matter to so many people. It doesn't have to be just in healthcare, but I particularly focus on those people who I understand their language and feel like I can meet their needs.
It's some brilliant insights. I mean, I think a lot of people, like you say, they kind of machine gun approach and fire it out to everybody. I've got the tire that you can put onto any bicycle, car, truck, anything you like, and just hire me and hope. Whereas kind of you take that step back, find out, you know, where's a space where there's, particularly in America, there's enough growth for any space in there. I mean, when I'm in Brisbane and it's the third biggest city in Australia and it's 2 million people, it's, you cut down. But I mean, still, if you find that space, there's still enough hospitals, there's still enough healthcare organizations to keep you more than busy.
Here's one point. I'll give you this analogy to that point. There are over 5,600 hospitals in the United States of America. If I spoke at 100 of them a year, it would take me 50 years to get through all of them. So that's plenty of business. And I'm not trying to do 100 keynotes a year. Yeah. I would love to do 100 keynotes a year, but my wife wouldn't like it too much. So.
Yeah. last couple of questions. In that space that you're talking about, so who is the person that you're trying to make contact with that first email or that first proposal within organizations? And then when it comes to, just to give people a bit of an idea, when it comes from, say, that first email to you actually being in front of people, what's the usual time frame for that to happen?
Yeah, so that's an important place for me to probably tease this out. So, you can start with reaching out to a couple different people. So for me, LinkedIn has become a very valuable tool for me professionally. So if you're not familiar with LinkedIn, it's a business networking website where people have business profiles, et cetera. So I use LinkedIn to search for people. So let's say I want to talk to the U.S. Pharmaceutical Association. Well, I'll go into LinkedIn and I'll search U.S. Pharmaceutical Association to see if there's anybody in my network that works at the U.S. Pharmaceutical Association. And if I find one person who, say, maybe they're a low-level nurse, they're not really a CEO or HR director, but I'll ask them, who's your CEO? Or who's the head of HR? Or do you know who's in charge of training and development for your company? Who's in charge of executive development? And so I'll find the person who has some level of responsibility of developing other leaders in the organization. So it's easily HR, human resources, or talent development, training and development, and sometimes it's strategic planning or manpower or human capital. And so I'll reach out to them and I'll have a short email that says, hello, my name is Anton Gunn, and I see that you're in charge of training and development for your company. I am a leadership coach and speaker that provides training to build world-class leadership culture in organizations. I reached out to you because you may need a speaker for your upcoming meeting. I would love to talk to you if you're so interested. In the meantime, I want to give you a free copy of my ebook that I wrote called Raising Cain, for you to learn the four keys to increase your impact as a leader. So I always give people something away. So for all of these aspiring speakers out there, one of the best tools you can develop is something that you've written. I know we always want to tell people to write a book. You don't actually have to write a book. You could write a white paper. Mm. Your white paper could be the 10 things you need to know about healthcare services, or the 10 things you need to know about leadership that'll make you a better person. So write a PDF white paper in a Word document, save it as a PDF, and give it away to people. Because what I find is the person that I reach out to, even if they're not interested in hiring me as a speaker today, they'll download the white paper and they'll read it. And they'll say, hey, this guy's pretty insightful. He has something to say. And if they are interested in me, their next question will be is, can you tell me more about your fees and how much you charge? Well, I never talk money out of the gate. The first person that talks money is the person that loses. Mm-hmm. So what you then answer for them is, I'd be happy to share my fees with you. Can you tell me more about the challenges you want to address in the training? So you put it back on them to have them ask you, to give you information around the challenges that they're having. And then you're able to craft your solution. So sometimes with some clients, if they reached out to me on a first of the month, let's say it's January 1st, they reached out to me, maybe by February 15th, we'll have a deal locked in. And the keynote speech may not be until March or April, but we'll have it locked in. But I'll give an example like today. I got an email this morning from a group that wants me to keynote their annual staff meeting on the 15th of January. And that's literally 10 days from now in Washington, D.C. And I live in South Carolina. So I reach out to them and I say, I'd be happy to do it. Let's sign a contract. You need to send me a 50% deposit. Once you send me the deposit and the travel fee, I'll book my plane ticket and I'll be there. And you give me the balance of my fee on the day of the event. And so sometimes it happens as short as 2 weeks. Sometimes I have clients who have booked me to speak in August of 2019. So it took about a 6-week process to close the deal, but my speaking engagement is not until, 9 months from now or 8 months from now.
Yeah, very, very good insights. And so finally, you said you don't want to give, or your wife doesn't want you to give a 100 keynotes a year. What does the next couple of years look like for your business? Is it scale with other people who can do that, or keep doing what you're already doing at the level that you can? What does it look like moving forward?
Yeah, so here's the way. I did 117 keynotes in 2017, and my wife didn't like it because I was gone a lot. This past year, I did 74 keynotes. I've scaled back a little bit. But what I'm trying to do more than just keynotes is to try to add ongoing value for a client. So for one example, I have a client who has booked me for 10 keynote events over a 2-year period. And so instead of me just being a one-off keynote speaker, I've said to them, listen, because I'm doing this many keynotes for you, maybe it should be better to look at me to do some ongoing leadership development, consulting, and training with you and your team. And so we're now in negotiations for a framework for me to come out quarterly and to do a day and a half leadership retreat with a group of leaders. And for that, I won't charge your typical keynote speaking fee, but they'll put me on a retainer that they'll pay me monthly. And so I become an extension of the company to do their work. And so I believe my future is a mix of both, that I'll still do the big annual conferences every year. I'm looking for more international events. So if any of your listeners want me to come to Australia, I'd be happy to come and do some international events. But I'll do the big conferences, but I'm looking for companies that I can invest more time in and actually help them to grow their leadership culture, have a greater impact that makes a bigger difference in the lives of the organization, and really move them to greater outcomes for how they serve their customers, but how their employees feel. Because I believe that everyone deserves to work for a world-class leader and work in an organization that they feel inspired to show up to work every day. And that only happens when you have good quality leaders who really understand the presidential principles that I teach.
That's brilliant. Well, if anyone is out there looking for somebody down under who can, as you can obviously understand, bring a lot of value to your organization and your staff, then make sure you get in touch. And if they are to get in touch, where's the best place to track you down, find out what you're up to, and get a look on behind the curtain?
Yeah, so you can always get a look behind the curtain by going to AntonGunn.com. That's my homepage for all things related to me. If you're a social media activist like I am, I'm all on social media a lot. Instagram is Anton J. Gunn. You'll learn a lot about my life, my family, my love for hip-hop music and culture by being on Instagram with me. I'm on Twitter at Anton J. Gunn. And I'm also on Facebook at Anton J. Gunn as well. LinkedIn is where I do my business and I network with business people. So you can find me there as well. All of my handles are Anton J. Gunn, easy place to find. But my homepage is AntonGunn.com. If you want to join my mailing list and get free leadership teaching every week through my newsletter, I'd be happy to share that with you. And you can sign up right there at AntonGunn.com.
Awesome. Well, as always, we'll link that at publicspeakingblueprint.com. Anton, it's been an absolute pleasure deep diving into your whole journey in the corporate world and just, you know, there's been a ton of gems that everyone can check out when this is or when they're listening to it. There'll be all the show notes and links. I just want to welcome you to the Speaker Nation family, and I look forward to catching up in the next couple of years when you're down under and giving a talk, and also hopefully jumping on this show and just seeing how everything has been progressing.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, Victor. Happy to be a part of the Fan Club Nation, your nation, and all that you do. If anything I can do to add value to you, please let me know.
Thanks, man. If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.